Hello, everyone, and welcome to North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm your host, David White. North Coast is blessed with some amazing songwriting talent. And through this process, we're going to peel back the curtain and we're going to shine some light on the process through which these songs actually get made, from the first spark of inspiration to that final polished track. Hello, and welcome to this edition of North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. We've cast the net a little broader than usual and come up with a Seattleite. I have the pleasure of being in the presence of Brad Warren. Brad's happened to be in town this weekend and agreed to come by and talk with us. Those of you who attend Fisher Poets Gathering are probably, you've probably had the pleasure of hearing Brad's stories and songs in that context. For those of you who haven't, well, you're in for a treat. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you, Dave. It's a real honor to be here.
Yeah. I like to start with people kind of at the beginning of their musical journey, you know, and ask questions like, were you in a musical family growing up? That's something that seems to be a common thread, I hear.
Yeah, I was. In fact, the way I grew up, there were two threads. My sister and I were raised to question authority and go to bat when necessary, and we were raised in a world where speech and music were of a piece. These were birthrights.
Nice. And how old were you when you picked up an instrument for the first time and decided you might want to learn to play it?
Well, pretty young. I think I heard my dad and his friends playing Summertime, and I thought, I want to do that. Uh-huh. And I think I was three. it took a while for it to take. But by the time I was a teenager, the bit was thoroughly in my teeth.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a good teacher?
I had some marvelous teachers. I was so lucky. I went to a high school that had a music program. It was a big high school, and it had a really good music program. And the music theater program was good. The music theory and composition program was really good. And to even to find such a thing at a high school, yes, was uncommon. And the guy who led it was an old composer and band leader from the kind of Tin Pan Alley era, who had all these wonderful stories he would regale us with, and an enormous amount of rigor. He was very demanding, and he was actually kind of disappointed that I was in his class. I was one of those punk, long hair rock and roller types, And he wanted disciplined young classical musicians who came in knowing how to read. And mm-hmm. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. The first semester, he flunked me out. And I wouldn't go away. I just kept coming back. I said, you can give me whatever grade you want. You can give me an F. I don't care. I'm here because you know what I want to know. And I'm not here for the grade. And at that point, we became bosom buddies.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, these days, teachers have such a challenge just getting through the day, and to have students who are genuinely interested in learning from them probably motivates them and makes them satisfied with what they're doing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful idea. I think maybe sometimes it's true.
Yeah.
Curiosity opens a lot of doors.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm curious to know how you made the transition from playing songs to actually writing them. What was your experience with your first attempt?
Mm. Well, I think most of the music that I wrote early on, and probably most of the music I write to this day, is forgettable and is forgotten for good reason. Forgetfulness is kindness in
yes,
many ways. The path for me was sort of lit by listening to other songwriters, many of whom I never knew. There was a church in the town where we lived where people would gather in the basement and play. Songwriters would come and perform. And you could go and just listen. At the time, I was playing rock and roll. And I realized that I actually had nothing to say. And I had no particular relationship with the audience that formed around us other than that they liked a party. And the music gave them a reason to party. And I was feeling this sort of burning loneliness that we had created this seemingly exciting social scene around our music. And it was vapid. It was empty. There was no relationship involved. And I would go to listen to these guys do this, just these exquisite songs driven by stories that are told because they have to be told. It began dawning on me, that's what I want to learn to do. That took me about 30 years. That was much harder than learning how to play fast-fingered rock and roll.
Yes. Yeah, being a cover band only gets you so far.
Well, in my case, that was never where I wanted to land. I knew I needed to learn how to pull the things out that matter and share them with people just to kind of live up to what I've been given, you know, I came from a family that actually originated around here. And my grandmother and my grandparents were people who fished on the Columbia and around the rivers, not for a living, but for essentially subsistence. They got through the Depression. They fed their neighbors and their friends and their own family. They canned. They grew a garden. They canned everything from there. They canned all their fish. And they taught that to my sister and I. Right. And, of course, what happened to them and to the river became sort of an organizing principle of my life. Mm-hmm. For them, the damming of the river and the ruin of the fisheries was a defeat, total. Yeah. Unspeakable. They could literally get out a couple of sentences and then they would stop. They couldn't speak anymore.
Yeah, it was a betrayal in a way for them, probably.
It was profound, yeah. And they were among thousands that who experienced mm-hmm. that. And for me, listening to them and the complete unspeakable ruin and defeat of it, my response to that, being raised as I was raised, was defeat. We'll see about that.
So who are your songwriting heroes? Who are your role models?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to list John Gorka as one of them. Gorka is one of the great songwriter poets of modern times. Leonard Cohen, mm-hmm. Arguably one of the tallest trees in the forest.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell.
Yes.
These are the trees it's worth walking a long ways to go visit.
Mm-hmm.
They're big in my book. There are many others. Yeah.
When you sit down, what inspires you and where do you find the seed that you plant and grow into a song?
Mm. I guess there are two things that I look for. One is, does it make my eyes wet? If I get that crack your heart open experience hearing about something, even if it's just a fragment of an experience, not even a full coherent story, but somehow it cracks me open, mm-hmm. I know that's worth making song about. Not all of the things that we make songs about are memorable, and that's for good reason. You know, it's neither are the songs. And I'm interested in writing work that I'll want to listen to in the future. That I would pay to go hear, and I would pay to go back and hear again, and let it soak in deeper. I aspire to that kind of writing, and song, and there are masters of that around. So I'm looking for first that crack your heart that quality. And then there are the things, like for me, the ruin of the river became something I felt we can't allow this to keep happening. And it's not just the river, it's the ocean, it's the planet, it's all of it. You know, this is our home. We owe it to ourselves and future generations and our ancestors who sacrificed so much for us to be here and have this chance. We cannot sleep this watch. So for me, that's a very compelling thing. And if the two combine, I feel like I'm really home. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah. I mean, some people say that music is kind of an ethereal art. It doesn't last. The experience of it doesn't last. But the way you describe it, I think, belies that. Because if it's good music, if it tells a story, if it transmits an emotion through the airwaves, through the vibrations, through your ears and into your heart, it stays there.
Yeah. You know? I think there are great pop and rock songs that people organize their lives around. And that become the sounding board and theme that they hold their lives up to and say, am I living up to it? Mm-hmm. I think for this isn't true for everybody. That there are other forms of this. Religion can be a medium we use that way, and you know it's a necessary function. But songs are a part of spiritual tradition, and they are for a reason. These are the things people use to organize what matters most in their world and to sustain what matters most.
Do you experience writer's block, and if so, how do you break it? How do you get through?
I do, and I think everybody does, and I don't think there's a single recipe for breaking it, but there are many tools and many ways into that. For me, one of them has been deliberately and regularly stilling the mind, allowing thoughts to settle like dust out of the air in a room, and then just very gently inquiring what's in there underneath that dust. It's just a very gentle inquiry, a kind of meditation, and it's as much as anything. It's about allowing the silence and the boredom to be there and tolerating them until that open space becomes a receptacle. Mm-hmm. Into that receptacle can come what matters. In spiritual terms, people speak about letting in the sacred or letting in, you know, the divine, whatever, letting in God. In ordinary human terms, whether we're spiritualizing this or not, we are full of noise, and what we do to make ourselves fit to receive matters. And there are many forms of that. For some people, it's just prayer, right? There can be many ways. That's one tool that I use. Mm-hmm. Another, and when I've taught songwriting, I really see this often, and I've seen it in my own experience. Most of us think, who am I to have a story to tell, to think that I have something to tell people? I've at one point, I was asked to do an oral history of my mother's family, her brothers and sisters and a big family and very, very humble Midwestern people. And there were 10 siblings, and they were about to have a reunion. And I said, I'm happy to do this, but you need to get their permission. You need I'm not going to come and impose on them if they don't want to tell their story, if they don't feel comfortable doing it. Yeah. And we asked, and every one of them said, no, I don't have a story to tell. There's nothing to see here.
Yeah. What is it? I mean, it seems like this culture in particular seems to have that voice in their head, questioning their self-worth and who am I? I'm not good enough and nobody's going to want to listen to my song.
That's right.
Or read my poetry or hear my stories. Yeah.
And in this case, I know their stories already from my mother.
Yeah.
And I know they have things to talk about that the world cares about. Some of these guys fought and won World War II. Do you think we don't care?
Right.
You know, and I think we silence ourselves with those voices.
Mm-hmm.
And how we learn to work with those voices, I think it's not about opposition and defeating them. It's about somehow finding a way to welcome them as the guard dogs we needed, but not letting them run the show.
Right.
Don't let the guard dog run the house.
Right. You observe them and say, okay, I hear you, but we're moving ahead anyway.
Yeah.
Right. In the event that you find inspiration and you write a song, how do you know when it's done? When do you say, okay, that's good. That's what I'm going to...
This is a good question. There are some songs that I have worked on for more revisions than I have been able to count. Mm-hmm. And for decades, in a few cases, where I don't think I got it all the way there, but I was impatient and wanted to get it out there. And so I go back and refine them. And sometimes done is just when you say. Mm-hmm. There are other cases where done is when the song does its job. Mm-hmm. And I would say that there's a particular song form I have spent probably 30 years learning how to write. It works a bit like a three-act play. Each act is something that conveys an action you can't take back once it's done. Mm-hmm. It's irreversible and consequential. And each act deepens the meaning in this case, in a song, it's the chorus whose meaning evolves as the verses push it forward. And by deepening it, I mean, in some way, it goes farther into your heart, or it grabs you in a way you hadn't expected, or that maybe you did expect because the form goes and does this over and over again, and you still want it because it's the payoff. And that payoff at the end of a song is when the journey is actually done, and you can actually see it. When in that form, the formal requirements of the work tell you when you got there.
You're listening to North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm your host, David White, and today we're speaking with Brad Warren, singer-songwriter and CEO of Global Ocean Health. Yeah, I think you've done a little bit of this through the conversation so far, but I'd like to ask people, what advice would you give to your younger self that might have helped your younger self be more confident or creative or free to put that voice aside, for example, and write songs?
Yeah. At least when I was young, what drove me was a quest for people to learn from. I was just so hungry for knowledge and experience. And it led me to, at least the way I did it, it led me in the early years to a lot of people I really didn't want to know. They didn't have anything to give. They were, particularly when I was doing rock and roll and I was a little better at it than I should have been for a kid who didn't know enough to know how little I wanted to do with that world. I met people who, I remember this one band that came along, I was 16, and they said, come work with us. And they offered me more money than I'd ever dreamed of making. Mm-hmm. Bands in some parts of the country were still making real money then. And I I looked at them and I thought, you're 30, 35, you're missing some teeth. You all got habits. Your music is even more aimless and boring than mine. I've got nothing to learn from you. If I went on the road with you in 2 weeks, I'd be in jail and you'd be in the hospital.
Yeah.
This, you know, and it was a good lesson for me. Yeah. I just wished I'd learned it faster. It took me a long time for all of that to sink in, to kind of pick people to learn from who have great big hearts, first of all, who just illuminate the room with their heart. Those are the people who make the world worth being in. And it took me so long to learn that.
Who do you write for? I mean, do you imagine an audience for a song? Or are you just delivering on the inspiration you've been fortunate enough to get?
Well, I often write for the audience at Fisher Poets these days. You know, I'd say in the last 10, 20 years, that's been a motivator for me. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a wonderful audience. Mm-hmm. You know, a community, one of the things that defines it is that you see your friends and neighbors and the people you admire stepping up and revealing who they are and laughing at themselves and you get a kind of natural context within which great story emerges, a story that matters emerges. It's part of the waterfront life. The waterfront as a whole is a community. And that's something I've been fortunate to be part of for a long time. And it's a real pleasure to get to work for that audience.
Cool. Well, you have your guitar in hand, and could you maybe introduce a song, talk a little bit about its story, and then play it for us?
I can. I'd be happy to. I'll give this a very brief intro. When I was a kid and I got my first job at a newspaper, it was in a little fishing town. And actually, that was my introduction to the world of commercial fishing. The paper didn't make enough money to pay anyone what they could live on. And we all had second jobs. And mine was to go play music in the fisherman's bar. And that bar was an insight into a world that it had a shadow side. And this song addresses some of that shadow. Oh. It's another cold, rainy day, if you can call it day. Palette imitation of a dimple in the sky, so the wharf rats can watch the boats wallow in low, and the tired crews can stagger to the 5 o'clock shadow. Crack a beer, let out a sigh. Tell me about the one that got away. Those emerald eyes, so they say, are why the docks are full of lies. That's what keeps me in business at the 5 o'clock shadow. Fisherman, maybe he's got his reasons. The whole harbor knows his warehouse is a grove. Girl, you thought that boat was for fish? If
you catch my drift, I'll buy you a round at the 5 o'clock shadow. Mm-hmm. They say the kingpin in this town used to swan around with his whole same crew in tow. He was young and proud when he sat down for a round. The guy who plays for keeps all the secrets you couldn't know at the 5 o'clock shadow. Now some folks say he's on the lam. The truth is, well, I ain't saying. If you're asking me who's paying, you sure you want to know? Take a look around and guess. Which one's a federal? He's looking high and low for the 5 o'clock shadow.
Makes me want to go have a beer out there. Or maybe a beer and a shot would be more like it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that must have been some experience. You played in there pretty regularly, got to know some of the regulars.
And... Well, I was there 5-6 nights a week, and a lot of the guys worked off-season jobs doing plumbing and carpentry for whoever was building. And whoever was building was often the folks bringing in just a whole new tide of money and power and politics. And one of them built a shopping center and built all the tradesmen who worked on it, built the bank that financed it. The bank went broke, but he was on the board, so he was part of it. It was the beginning of the cracking open of the great big inside job that amounted to the 1980s savings and loan scandal that picked our pockets as taxpayers for $750 million. And it, by the time that bank was done failing, there were bodies in the trunks of cars. Mm-hmm. It was that little bar was a window into that world and just how it stepped on people like bugs.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Brad, thank you very, very much for being here. I really enjoyed it. And I really appreciate your music, and it's, I think it's achieving your goal, which is to actually touch the hearts of people. You're communicating a lot of emotion and in nice ways that are easy to absorb, but moving. Yeah.
Thank you kindly. Yeah. It's a pleasure and an honor to get to visit with you. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks again. Well, that's a wrap for this edition of North Coast Songwriter Spotlight. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you know a North Coast songwriter who you'd like to hear interviewed on this program, drop me a line at dlwhite46@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.